Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer, co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
Welcome, seekers, to God Beyond the Bible, the podcast by seekers and for seekers. Our hope is that our podcast is a bright spot in your week, and that we might, in some small way, make a contribution to your spiritual journey as together we serve this tour of duty we call life. Do we have any shout-outs?
Well, I want to make a little shout-out to our good friend Kirk, and he's going through some physical stuff, you know, going through some illness and stuff. And let's just, if you guys, you folks that believe in the power of prayer out there, just say up a prayer for Kirk. God knows who he is, whether
right.
we know who he is or not.
Yeah.
So, hey, Kirk, it's all going to look better from here. I know you're going through some kind of dark times. It's all going to look better from here. I believe that in my spirit.
That's right. Okay, on our last episode, we dedicated it to the topic of baptism. And we likely didn't say anything that most of you didn't already know, but sometimes it helps to stream together the various points and beliefs on a topic so that we might take a little broader view and decide what it is we believe and why we believe it.
And as we kind of reviewed the episode notes, we noticed that we didn't touch on one of the questions a lot of people have, and that's the question of more than one baptism for an individual. So we thought we would break tradition and devote just a few moments of this episode to that question.
There are a number of reasons people get rebaptized. One reason may be that they received infant baptism or even early childhood baptism, and later in life they felt compelled to redo the event as a more meaningful spiritual step, thus leading to having been baptized twice. And this is very common in Protestant circles. And in fact, let me say right here is, well, let's just go ahead. And you get the next
okay.
reason.
Well, another reason that some folks are baptized multiple times is that some denominations believe that if you leave the church or you go out into the world and, quote, live in sin, as they often phrase it, that you actually lost your position of salvation and you have to make a new profession of faith and be rebaptized.
And the third reason, and this may be the most controversial of them all, is that some denominations, such as the Southern Baptist, which we're very familiar with, actually require a person to be rebaptized if they come from another denomination and wish to join the church membership. In other words, they do not recognize your former baptism, even though it meets their requirement of baptism by immersion. They will require you to be rebaptized to become a member of their congregation. This seems to move baptism from an act of obedience to Jesus Christ to an act of obedience to a denomination.
And let me talk about, and who I was thinking about, a person came to mind that a few years ago I was pastoring a church and he was a member there. And he said, you know, I've been baptized three times. I said, really? He said, yeah, the first time I was baptized into whatever it was that he was denominated. He said, then I came to this other denomination. They required me to be rebaptized. He said, then I came to the Baptist and they required me to be rebaptized. I said, well, let me ask you a question. This would be someone that's got, I said, two of those baptisms didn't count, right? If you've been baptized three times,
yeah.
two of them didn't. I said, which one do you think was the real? He said, my first one. So, he was just being rebaptized, just to be a member of it. And guys, I think that just really takes away from
We attended a church that expected me to be rebaptized because I was baptized into a non-denominational church when you were the pastor and you were the one who baptized me to begin with.
Yeah.
And, but because it was
I
not
think,
into,
didn't DJ? Didn't yeah, I do the same thing with DJ?
The same thing.
Same way. And I had baptized him when I was pastoring a community church and we went into a Southern Baptist church and they were going to, and I said, nah,
this is
not how this works. This is not going to work here. In this, and of course, you can see I've been at odds with the Southern Baptist through the years with all that. Okay, now what we're about to go into a 2-segment episode, and it'll. Do you guys hear something in the background?
It sounds like we have a ghost out there.
Yeah, I hear something hurrying. Okay, this 2-segment episode will be a first in a series of episodes dedicated to the topic of Paul's Gospel of Grace and a little deeper look into the conflict in the early churches surrounding this topic. As you probably are aware, we released an episode earlier this year, episode number 6, called Conflict of Doctrine in the Early Church. It'd be a good idea to go back and listen to that episode as a kickstart to this series, even though we will probably cover much of that same ground again.
Right. So, okay, there are a number of things we hope to clear up in this series of discussions. Some of those being, was there a conflict of doctrine in the early churches, namely between Paul and his ministry to the Gentile believers, and the leaders of the Jewish believers in the region of Judea and Jerusalem.
And what impact did this conflict have on our New Testament?
And we're going to look at, as time goes by, why and who was questioning Paul's credentials as an apostle that caused him to have to defend himself in most of the letters he wrote, or at least some of them, in the book of Galatians, namely.
Right. And we're also going to talk about why we think that Paul's letter to the Galatian churches just may be the most significant single work in the collection of works that we call the Bible, and how it should probably be the work that we should use to interpret the rest of the Bible and not vice versa.
Obviously, we're not going to get all this ground covered today, but this will give you an idea of where we're going and why we think this just may be the most important topic we've approached.
Okay, starting with this one. You may ask, why does it matter? This question can't be answered in a single phrase or thought. When we finally see the elephant in the room, that is, the fact that there is a conflict, and the bulk of the New Testament is made up primarily of letters being written and sent out to the various regions of believers, arguing the two different points of view. The Bible, especially the New Testament, will come alive, and it'll actually make more sense to us.
It will, yeah. And we say this because many of the issues that divide us today stem from these two opposing views. Issues such as, how do we enter into a right relationship with God? What does God want? Is he content for us to merely believe on Jesus Christ to make us right with him? Or does he expect us to do certain things and live a certain way before we are accepted?
Another issue is what is titled in church lingo, a security of the believer, or once saved, always saved, versus you may be saved at one point and lost again at another.
These seem to be a couple of the main topics of conflict in the minds of believers even today.
And what has really happened is we've become programmed to read the Bible, especially the New Testament, as a single work that comes to us directly from God himself instead of what it really is. A collection of works by different people from different walks of life with different points of view as they endeavor to know God.
To put it another way, when we stop looking at the New Testament as a single forest of green trees and start looking at the individual trees that make up the forest, we get a much clearer understanding of the forest itself. The truth is, the contributors to the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Paul, Peter, James, and Jude were all inspired, but not infallible. They were real people who came from very different walks of life, whose approach to Jesus Christ and God himself were shaded by their life experience and religious background, just as we all are today.
Mm-hmm. And I may have left someone out there. I just kind of did that in my memory. There may have been another writer of the New Testament. Did I miss someone? Did you guys jump
but
out?
I was really proud of myself when I said John Paul and didn't say Ringo next.
Yeah. Yeah. So what we're really trying to say here is that this will open up to you, if you will be open-minded about this, this will open up to you the understanding that this is not, these guys, though inspired, they just weren't infallible. Everything they said, no more than anybody that's inspired. We may have someone that writes the most inspiring poem or the most, faith matters, or the most inspiring song that's ever been written, or preach the most inspiring message we've ever heard. But that person themselves, you can't follow them around, and everything they say or every letter they write, everything they write down or every thought they have, say, well, that's directly from God. Everything that's the only point we're trying to make.
Right.
When we begin to accept and embrace this truth, it doesn't diminish the New Testament. It brings it alive. It makes it real. Suddenly it starts to make sense. As we grow more sure and comfortable with this new approach, we won't find ourselves reading one passage and being encouraged and comforted, and then reading another and being conflicted and afraid. Have you guys ever done that? You just read something that Paul wrote, maybe the book of Galatians. It's very comforting. It's very inspiring, very uplifting. Then you'll jump over and maybe read what Peter wrote, and we said this before, Peter and Jude. Very similar, almost like they were written by the same person, 2 Peter and Jude especially, and some believe that maybe they were. But then they'll start saying things like, now, if God didn't spare the angels that sinned, what makes you, what makes you think he's going to spare you?
Yeah.
If God didn't spare the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt and then all of them died in the wilderness, what makes you think that he's going to, and you see what I'm saying? You go from a place, you'll read one passage, you get really comforted, and you say, wow, this is really uplifting. I'm encouraged. And then the next thing you do, you get all the blocks knocked out from under you. And that's because you're reading two different people with two very different points of view.
And, you know, when you talk about it coming alive, the New Testament, I used to be bored out of my mind reading the Bible. I'm not going to lie. I read it, and it was just... It was boring.
I always just loved the begats.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, and you've shown me how they kind of go back and forth, and we're going to talk about it, and they're answering each other, and they're talking to each other, and it just makes it so real. You realize that this was a real situation. It kind of makes me realize it was real people.
It's like,
you know?
It's like any of us on a different side of an issue. You see it on Facebook all the time.
Uh-huh.
You see it. All right, this person writes this. The other person writes a rebuttal. James was making a rebuttal to Paul's gospel of grace. His whole letter was about rebuttaling his, because there was a conflict. And we're going to show you as this goes on, as we get into segment two. Yep. We're going to show you that this conflict was very real. It was very much alive, and it was fiery.
Yes.
It was very fiery between the Jerusalem apostles and the apostle Paul.
All right. So with that thought, we're going to break, regroup, and set up for segment two.
And welcome back, Seekers, to God Beyond the Bible, the podcast by Seekers and for Seekers. Today's episode begins a series of episodes discussing what we think is the root of all division and frustration that we are experiencing in the Christian culture today. It's this flawed idea that we've been programmed to believe that the New Testament is a single, inerrant, and infallible work. That if we will just look at it in the right light, we'll see that there is no conflict among its contributors.
Well, the fact is, there is conflict. And to open our spiritual minds to this truth, we will make this journey, it'll make this whole journey much easier and much logical, especially as we read the New Testament.
Right. And all we will have time for, and probably all we need to try to establish in this episode, is that there is clearly a conflict. As we stated earlier, if you have the time, you're encouraged to go back to episode 6, titled The Conflict of Doctrine in the Early Church.
As we stated, the conflict revolved around Paul's approach to the gospel, which is, we're saved by grace through faith alone. In other words, we enter into a right relationship with God by merely believing that he gave his son Jesus, who died for our sins, to make us right with himself.
Now, opposed to this faith-only approach to the gospel, or being made right with God, is James' approach. His approach is that faith, or believing alone, is not sufficient to being right with God. James argued that we must have faith, that is, believe, plus perform certain works in order to enter into the right relationship with God.
So in short, the controversy of that day revolved around Paul's declaration that believing was sufficient and there was no need to be circumcised or follow the law of Moses.
James's stance was that once you believed on Jesus, you must then be circumcised and follow the law of Moses to be right with God. And as we continue this series, we will discover that Peter and Jude seem to take... We will discover that Peter and Jude seem to take and support James's faith plus works approach, as opposed to Paul's faith alone approach.
Now let us state that if you take this issue to your priest, your bishop, your pastor, your church leader, you're likely to be given the standard apologetics response. And that is, Paul and James were actually saying the same thing. They were just saying it in different ways. Even though this is the answer, that I would have probably given you 10 years ago, this response is an insult to your intelligence.
It is. We have discovered that biblical scholars and students themselves will acknowledge the conflict on one hand and then turn around and deny that the conflict between James and Paul exists on the other, depending on how it suits the circumstance. You will find this especially in some commentaries. When you read some of their introductions to the book of Galatians, they will acknowledge it is a book written in response to conflict, but they're often vague about who Paul's conflict is with. We're often left to believe that it is some mysterious group of Jews who are following Paul around, contradicting his faith-only gospel, when the truth is it was the apostles, led by James, who remained in Jerusalem, who were contending with Paul.
So let's begin by laying the two opposing statements of conflict out side by side. We'll do this with a little role-playing. Alan, Dad, you be James.
Okay.
And I'll be Paul.
All
and
right.
Tabby's going to be the person we're writing to.
Okay.
And we'll let her tell us how she interprets our statements.
Okay.
Okay. Well, Trayson will write to Tabitha, and she's going to represent Paul by reading statements from Paul's letter in Romans chapter 4. So here's Tabitha, she's going to be Paul, and she's writing, and the little first part's going to be a little paraphrase, but then she's going to read to you from what Paul wrote. So Trayson is Paul writing a letter to Tabitha.
Dear Tabitha, this is Paul writing you in response to your question of what you need to do to be right with God. Here is your answer. Abraham was, humanly speaking, the founder of our Jewish nation. What did he discover about being made right with God? If his good deeds had made him acceptable to God, he would have had something to boast about. But that wasn't God's way, for the scriptures tell us Abraham believed God, and God counted him as righteous because of his faith. When people work, their wages are not a gift, but something they've earned. But people are counted as righteous, not because of their work, but because of their faith in God, who forgives sinners. David also spoke of this when he described the happiness of those who were declared righteous without working for it. David said, "Oh, what joy for those whose disobedience is forgiven, whose sins are put out of sight. Yes, what joy for those whose record the Lord has cleared of sin." And that's from Romans chapter 4, verses 1 through 8.
So, Tabitha, give us your responses. Give us your response to what you think Paul was saying if he wrote that letter to you.
Okay. I think that Paul is saying that there's nothing I can do to earn my way. It's a free gift. I haven't done anything and can't do anything to earn God's favor. He's given it to me, and there's nothing that I have to do but believe on him.
Okay. And he used, let's don't forget, he used Abraham as the reference.
Mm-hmm.
He said,
yes,
Abraham believed God, and that was counted as righteousness.
Now, Alan is going to write to Tabitha in the words of James.
Okay. Dear Tabitha, this is James writing you in response to your question of what you need to do to be right with God. Here is your answer. Now, some people may argue, some people have faith and others have good works, but I say, how can you show me your faith if you don't have good works? I will show you my faith by my good works. You say that you have faith, for you believe that there is one God? Good for you. Even the demons believe this, and they tremble in terror. How foolish. Can't you see that faith without works is useless? Don't you remember that our ancestor Abraham was shown to be right with God by his actions when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see, Abraham's faith and his actions worked together. His actions made his faith complete. And so it happened, just as the scriptures say, Abraham believed God, and God counted him righteous because of his faith. He was even called the friend of God. So you see, we are shown to be right with God by what we do, not by faith alone. Just as the body is dead without breath, so also is faith dead without works. And that's James, reference James chapter 2, verses 14 through 26.
Okay, Tabitha, how are you feeling now?
Okay, well, according to James, I feel like I now have to believe on God. But like Abraham, I also have to show that through my actions. Because even apparently demons and the worst of the worst believe there is a God. So that's not enough. I have to show it in everything that I do.
And does that feel a little bit contrary to what Paul said?
Yes.
Do we see here where that James is contradicting Paul and calling him out?
Mm-hmm.
And they both use the same, we're going to be talking about that, use the very same verse of scripture. One doesn't have to be a biblical scholar to see that each of these men were aware of the other's writings to the churches. They purposely quoted the same Old Testament passage referencing Abraham. Paul clearly stated that he believed that Abraham was right with God simply because he believed God. James retorts, big deal. Demons believe. It's faith plus works that makes us right with God. These guys stopped just short of calling each one out by name.
They did. In the episodes to come, we're going to take you to the book of Acts, where twice Paul goes up to Jerusalem to try and smooth over the conflict. The first time in Acts chapter 15 and the final time in Acts 21, where against much advice warning him not to go, Paul goes anyway. There is evidence to support that Paul may have been set up by James and the Jerusalem apostles. For sure, his presence in Jerusalem and temple attendance result in a riot, and Paul is arrested with no intervention to try and rescue him by the Jerusalem church leaders.
And I'm going to go ahead and just say to you, I'll let you guys say, Have you read these? I mean, you've probably both read these two chapters. I know we've studied them before. It's clear, especially in chapter 21, everybody's saying, Paul, don't go down there. You're going to, even one of the prophets, Agabus, and we're going to be talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Agabus said, look, he took Paul's drawstring off his robe and tied his hands up and said, this is what's going to happen to you when you go down there.
Right.
But Paul, I don't know if Paul was going in anger. I don't know if he's going to go and said, I'm going to set the record straight once and for all. I'm tired of these Jerusalem apostles coming down here and messing with my people.
Yeah.
Down here and giving them, filling their head full of stuff. Because listen, folks, the real problem was they were fighting over circumcision. That was the issue of that day. Circumcision. If you believe, you can't be, the Jews could not understand or even believe in the early apostles that there was any possible way outside of being a Jew you could be saved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And James and Peter pretty well stuck with this. They just had a problem. But we're going to learn a lot of stuff. Let this stick in your mind. Remember the letters that we wrote that Trayson read for Paul and read. There's are two contradicting points of view.
They are.
Yes, they are.
You can't say, don't tell me they're saying, yeah, but James is just saying, if you have faith, your works will come. And you, that's not what he said. He said, Abraham, you see, Abraham was justified by what he did, not by just believing. And Paul said he was justified just by believing. Y'all have anything to say before we conclude this episode? I know it's a little short, but I want you to digest this. I want our audience to digest this, because we're going to go pretty deep in this, and this will really open up the New Testament in a way for you that you've never looked at it before.
Most definitely it will.
I think we're ready for a conclusion.
Okay. I challenge you, the listener, our friends, fellow seekers, to take personal responsibility for your own faith. It takes open-mindedness and a pursuit of personal growth in your faith to even consider the implications there are in what we're presenting to you in this series. The payoff will be that you really can own your own faith. Your relationship to God through Christ really can be a peaceful, encouraging, and relaxed walk of faith. It will require a spiritual paradigm shift. It may require you to acknowledge that up until now, your relationship with God has been somewhat vicarious. In other words, you may discover that you have read about other people's relationship with God in the Bible, or listened and heard about others' relationship with God in the church, but it has never really been just you and God. If you'll keep an open mind, these next few episodes may change the way you look at the New Testament, but not in a bad way, but in a very refreshing and good way.
So until next time, may God's grace, peace, and love be on you, in you, and follow and direct you and those you love through your journey of faith and life from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.